Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
We're in chapter 25, and Kings 2, verse 18. Okay. We were talking the last thing about how they removed the beams from the temple, and I showed you the picture in the beginning of the Talmud, how they had those very famous beams. Mm-hmm. Is it a word beam or like a...
Columns.
Columns, that's the right word. And there's a famous question, what happened to them? What happened to the equipment of the Beit HaMikdash? The church definitely has things from the Beit HaMikdash. They never come clean on the issue. In the Middle Ages, there were rabbis that lived in Italy that had access to the church and were able to get inside and see things like the menorah and other things that were there. And Rome hasn't been sacked since the Middle Ages. In other words, they were claiming that when the Huns came, 800 years ago, all that stuff disappeared. Well, it didn't all disappear. They've never come totally... they believe that they took over for the temple, and so they don't want to admit that they have things that don't belong
to
them.
Isn't there a hypothesis that the original menorah mm-hmm. is buried somewhere in Rome?
It definitely was in Rome hands. In other words, within the Vatican possessions. What exactly happened to it? Where there's some secret chamber, and nobody really knows.
In
one of the catacombs.
Stashed somewhere.
Yeah. We learned this book really is a book on the kings, on the discussion of the kings, and we talked about the. Hey, Jared, how are you?
I'm leaving. I want to give you a hug.
Oh, okay.
Take care.
All the best.
And you guys have fun. I'm so happy for you guys when you're seeing.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Very good.
Thank you.
And you guys have a good summer. I wish I could stick around, but I got to get back to New York.
All the best. Have a good trip.
Take
care. So, so we were talking about this. Really, the focus is on the kings, on the monarchy. And the 10 tribes, even though we talked about that there's two leaderships of the Jewish people. There's the leadership from Yehuda, and then there's the leadership from Yosef. And that's the leadership from the two great mothers, from Rachel and from Leah. And there's going to be two Mashiachs, Mashiach ben David and Mashiach ben Yosef. And the leadership from Yosef, where the 10 tribes, didn't last very long. It got corrupted very quickly, and it just unfortunately didn't work. The ideal scenario is when we are able to have two sets of leaders that get along with each other and work together, even though they represent different forces. That's wouldn't all politics be great if people, they could work together for the benefit of their country or their... the real monarchy is the monarchy of Yehuda from the house of David. And the majority of the kings were good, but there's free will. And it's interesting how generations change. Sometimes there's an idea that each generation has to find an area where they can excel at. They have to be offered opportunities to develop and to make an impression. Because if they're not given an opportunity to make an impression in a good way, sometimes they go in a different direction. And we had that almost like a seesaw, where one king would be good and one king would be bad, and we had a lot of that. We really talked about the last king, Sidkiyahu. And he was a tragedy. We mentioned just an interesting idea that he was, his punishment was that his children were slaughtered in front of him, and then he was blinded. And Chazal, even though as a king, it's a shame. I mean, his job was to be a king, and he didn't do a good job at that. The temple was destroyed. He didn't lead the people in a good way. But he was personally not a bad person. But from the fact that he was blinded would lead us to think that part of his problem was he was blind to the problems. He imagined that it would never happen. The temple will never be destroyed. The Babylonians will never come here. He just refused to see. We mentioned that he goes to prison, and he's blinded. And he actually survives... Nebuchadnezzar by one day. He's taken out of prison after Nebuchadnezzar dies, and then he lives one day, and then he dies. That was the Tzitzio. Whereas the other king, who was even a previous king who had been had done a bad job, and the country was overrun, and that was Yechoniah. And we said, to his credit, that when Nebuchadnezzar came, instead of putting the people to allowing them to be killed, and you know that's the tragedy of this crazy guy in Syria. He could care less if you know thousands of people get killed. So Gaddafi, the same thing. Like as long as they have their power, they don't care about the people. As bad as a king as he was, when the Romans, or not the Romans, when the Babylonians came for him, he didn't want the people to be killed. He gave himself up. It mentioned that earlier in the chapter. He gave himself up. And he was in prison for 37 years. And we talked about how they lowered his wife down in the jail cell, and that Hashem, the prophet, had said he'd have no children. But he somehow, spending all that time in the prison cell, he was alone with Hashem. He reconnected to Hashem and to the Jewish religion. And when his wife had said it really wasn't the right time of the month, he said, okay, I can't do it. And because of that willingness at that stage in his life, and it's not easy, to become religious or more religious at any stage of one's life. But when one's lived a whole life, and then later on in life they decide they want to be more committed, it's like young people, they change their clothes, they change their religion, they jump in, they jump out. But a person who many, many years has done things a certain way, and then is willing to take a step forward. So Hashem said, wow, I'm changing the prophecy. You will have children. And he did have children, and the next set of leaders we're going to learn about came from his descendants. And but before then, we have one more little chapter here. Let's go to verse 18. The Yikach Ravat Habachim, and the person attacking Israel, who was the general of Sancheirav, was supposed to be a general. Generals are supposed to conquer a country. And you conquer a country because you want tax revenue, you want them to be subservient. He's called in Hebrew Rava Tabachim. A tabach is a butcher. Rava Tabachim means he was just the chief butcher. There's no word other than describe him. He was a maniac. Some people say that that's what soldiers are. Soldiers are trained to kill. That's what they're trained to break things, and that it's the modern army is changed from that, where they try to train soldiers to be good boys, and you know, they have these things that come out of Afghanistan, how they urinate on the Korans, and they play with the bodies, and that. But part of it speaks to the fact that a good soldier is somebody that just, you know, just wants to destroy and kill, and you know that it's the old tradition of soldiers anyways was that. It would kind of make them into heroes and other things, but there is some of that in the army, which is just to get people to be very angry and very upset with the enemy, and therefore it shouldn't surprise us when we see these things in Afghanistan. I mean, these people kill their buddies with the bombs and this and that, and so it's my feeling is it's hard to be upset with them for even though it's not appropriate, whatever they did with the pictures or the other things, I know, with the Afghan soldiers. But this particular general, he's described as just a butcher. You can't...
Potiphar butcher?
Potiphar?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. No, I don't know.
Was it considered a butcher? Chief butcher? That's wrong.
He was considered... No, that was the... I think there it was more that he provided the food for the king.
With the flesh in there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think here it's describing him. We have a tradition that there was a certain valley in Israel where he slaughtered 500,000 people by hand, just one after another. The tradition was that when he came to the temple, he saw a certain blood that was bubbling, and he asked the Jews to tell him what it was, and they said, oh, we just slaughtered a cow. And he said, he strung that Jew up and he started whipping him. Now tell me the truth. He knew that wasn't the cow blood, and he found out that was the blood of the prophet Zechariah, who had told the Jewish people to do tshuva and was killed in the temple courtyard on Yom Kippur. So he said that we didn't listen to our prophets who had told us that we should we should give in and not fight, not rebel against Bavel, and that's why we're being punished. So he said, I will get the blood to stop bubbling. And he went on a slaughter, and he killed young and old and the Sanhedrin, and he just kept on butchering, just killing people by hand. You know, the Nazis, they did it with equipment. It was much, they were distant from it, you know, the gas. Or, this guy was literally with his sword killing thousands.
Is this new Zardom?
Mm-hmm, that's right. So he took his Yo Koin Rosh, Vesapanyo Koin Mishnah, Veshloshe Sherman Saf. The Jewish people had a lot of great people. If their names are mentioned here in the Tanakh, they were something special. And from the city, he took a guy who was in charge of the defense minister, V'chamisha Anashim Roya Penei HaMelech. Had an interesting expression, five people who saw the king's face. Those are the ministers. They meet with the king. The king's, but in Hebrew, it's Roya Penei HaMelech. What do they call them over here? Those who seek the king's face. That means they have meetings with the king. So, and then you had the scribe, the one that was trusted to write everything down. And then he also just took 60 random people. He took them and he brought them to king in Babel. And they just slaughtered them. They took the trouble to bring them down to Babel, and part of their enjoyment was to just kill them. And Yehuda was sent into Galus. This was it, really. This was the end of the Jewish people in the land of Israel. Verse 22. Now, even when you cart off people, it's impossible that there shouldn't be some remaining. And there were some that were left to, like caretakers, just to be in charge of the vineyards and to do the fields, just some common laborers. Yifkad Aleihem, and he appointed Gedaliah ben Achicham ben Shaphan. Now, we have a fast day about Gedaliah, the one right after Rosh Hashanah. His yahrzeit on Rosh Hashanah, some Gedaliah. Now, what happened was that one of the reasons a lot of our troubles in the Middle East today are because we didn't have a continuous presence there. And meanwhile, the Arabs moved in. And so they think it's their place because they've been there. Now, had we had a continuous presence in the land, then we would have been able to come back to something. We mentioned how that since there were Jews in Babylonia, when the exile started, it was actually not so hard on us because we went down to a Jewish community. They were Jews to receive us and take care of us. And Jews have this tradition that we take care of our brothers. You know, we take care of... It always was that there were Jews from other countries who were fleeing because you'd have these monarchs would change and all of a sudden Jews wouldn't be welcome in a country and they would come to another country, but they knew that their fellow Jews would take them in. In this country, we've taken in Jews from the Arab countries, from Syria, from Iran and Iraq. In the earlier years, the Jewish family services were there. They took in Jews from Romania and from the Iron Curtain, the Russian Jews. I guess it's fortunate that lately we don't take them in America. They go to Israel or they have a better place to go to. But it was part of, I remember even growing up that, you know, Jews would come from Russia and from, you know, people would try to do things to help those Jews get used to living, you know, help the rest. But that's a Jewish tradition going way back that when, you know, our brothers come from other countries that are refugees, they're not refugees because they're coming home. What happened though was we still had a presence in the land of Israel with Gedaliah. The Yishma Kosai Chalam Heva Nashim Ki Hizkid Mel Bavel. Now there were soldiers who were in different places who were still alive, and they heard that there was a Jewish presence in the land, Gedaliah. So they came to Gedaliah and they started the effort to rebuild the land. That's one of the traditions that David HaMelech talks about this in the Tehillim, that it says Sheva Yipal Atzadik Bekam, that a Jewish trait is you always get up again. You never give up. It says a righteous person falls seven times. That's a lot of times to fall is seven times, and he just gets it right back up again. That's the tradition that we have. We never throw in and say let's just give up. We wouldn't be back in Eretz Yisrael now if we had just given up. You know, we don't just give up. We keep on at it. And so over here. The Gedaliah was there, and so they went back to him to try to rebuild. Now, the problem we always run into is what we call midos, which are how do you translate midos?
Attributes.
Or there's one leader left, and he's rebuilding. So what happens? someone else is jealous. It says, who made you the boss? How, you know, there's two Jews and they got to fight. You know, here there's a few Jews left and someone has to fight. Who's going to be the leader, right? It's so frustrating, right? That's something that we work on, that we believe that we all have to work on good character traits. That, you know, you don't let that kind of thing happen. You know, my goodness, can't you let that, you know, you have a small committee and someone's going to say, well, who made him the boss? You know, I got to be the boss or whatever. We got to fight over something. You know, it's silly. But unfortunately, it's the human condition. And it's a tragedy. And that's really why we have the Fast of Gedalia, is that, you know, here, if it wouldn't have been for this petty jealousy, we wouldn't have to worry about the Arabs. We would have had a continuous presence in the land of Israel. We would have had a home. History would have been totally different. But unfortunately, there was a petty jealousy. Now, why was this guy jealous? So the tradition has it. Let's read. He was from the tribe of Yehuda, and he was related. He felt that if there's a leader, he has to be from the right Yichus. He has to be from the tribe of Yehuda. And so how dare this upstart Gedalia take leadership position? That was his feeling. So he decided that permitted him to go and kill him. He would do the great mitzvah. Right? But that's the tragedy of it, is that sometimes everything wouldn't be lost and we could pick up the pieces, but sometimes bad nidos prevent us from... bad character trait, petty jealousy, or prevents things from happening. Vishmo ben Nisanya. This guy, Vishmo ben Nisanya, Yochan ben Kareh, Vesurah ben Nechamad ben Amasya, Hema Anashayim. Well, actually, we didn't get, I jumped the gun. We're going to read about him in two more lines. These were famous soldiers that came to help Gedalia. Vishava lehem Gedalia l'anashayim. And Gedalia promised them that the Babylonians, the same Babylonians that had wiped out the population and had butchered everybody, had now said they had enough and they would let the caretakers just administer the land. He said, don't be afraid. He said, you know, we can hang around here, and as long as we're loyal to Bavel, everything will be good, no more butchering. And it was in the seventh month where Yishmael, this is the bad guy, his name was Yishmael, surprise, surprise, Yishmael, apparently was a Jewish name at certain points. Something's never changed, that's right.
We have Rav Yishmael.
What? Rav Yishmael, that's right, we have good Yishmaels too. But anyway, this guy was not good. Now it says over here, Mizera Hamalucha. He felt that if there's got to be a leader, they should have picked me. They should have picked somebody from the king's family. And instead, they picked this guy. Basar Nashimito, the Yaakov, what did he do? He went and he assassinated Gedaliah. Yomos, Vesihudim, Vesekasim, Meshaha, Ito, Mitzvah. He wiped out the remnant that was there in Mitzvah. But you come out, now, the people now were afraid because Gedaliah had been appointed by the Babylonians to administer, and now Jews had killed him. They thought the Babylonians for sure would come back and kill everybody who was there.
So, what tribe was Gedaliah from?
I'm not sure. The Kumu Kalami Katnad got older from younger to old, the Sarakon, the Yavmi tribe. They went to Egypt. Now Jeremiah tried to tell him that Egypt's not a good place to go to, but they were so afraid to stay there, they went down to Egypt. They thought they would be safe there.
The Babylonians are called Kastin?
Kastin, yeah.
And that's where Abraham's version?
That's right. One other piece to the puzzle. Tradition has it that the spies told Gedalia that this guy Yishmael was up to no good. And Gedalia said, I don't want to hear Lashon Hara. And he didn't. There's an interesting rule, which is with Lashon Hara, it's only Lashon Hara if it's for no purpose. But if you're going to, if somebody could take advantage of you, let's say you're going to go into business with someone, and someone says this guy's a cheat, you're not supposed to say. You have to protect yourself from someone who might be trying to harm you. It's not Lashon Hara to, if you're going to invest with someone and people know that he's a crook, they should tell you. That's not wrong. Lashon Hara means saying evil things for no purpose. He should have at least been careful, Gedalia. So some people feel the tragedy was Gedalia was not willing to take the steps to protect himself from him. But either way, that's just that's really a side issue. It's just mentioned here in passing. So there was no more Jews in the land of Israel. The only Jews at this time were now in Bavel. And one of the interesting things about Haftorahs and Tanakh is that it's always upbeat. I told you, with Judaism, we never, even when people sit Shiva, they get up. People can't stay depressed. They can't, you know, things are, it's never, it's not our way. In other words, there's a time for mourning, there's a time when people cry, and then we pick ourselves up and we have like 3 weeks now of mourning, and then we have the Shabbos Nachamu, the 7 weeks of comfort for the 3 weeks of mourning. But it was on 37 years of Golus Yehoyakin. So this king was in a dungeon for 37 years. Now, Sancheiriv had died, and now his son, whose name was Evil, they call him Evil, but that's because the Hebrew is Evil. The Hebrew is Evil, but he wasn't evil. I used to read that and think, boy, he was like, must have been really bad if he's called Evil. But no, that was his Hebrew name was Evil, Evil. So they translated Evil as Evil, but it's really not. It's Evil. Evil Moroda, Melibovo, and he actually wasn't a bad king. He certainly wasn't evil, Evil Moroda. I don't know how they pronounce it in English, if they pronounce it evil, but it really shouldn't be evil, it's evil. So what he did was, when the previous king died, they released all the prisoners. It goes beyond that. Nebuchadnezzar was known as being a very vicious king. And even his own children, when he died, they were happy and they wanted to change his policy. It's almost like when Stalin died, you know, that they... So basically he let all the prisoners out because he knew his father was such a brute. Tradition has it even more, that Nebuchadnezzar had gone insane for a while and had ran off to the forest. And so one of his sons had declared himself king. And when Nebuchadnezzar got his sanity back, or he came out of the forest, he then had that son put to death for taking charge. So when they had told him that Nebuchadnezzar was dead, he didn't believe them. So he dug up the body, and then he had a sword put through it just to make sure. But the fact that we have this legend that he didn't care that much for his father. You know, that was the obviously. So he changed the policy. So he emptied the dungeons, and sitting in the dungeon was the last of the line of David, the last king from the house of David. And he took him out of the dungeon, Rosh Yehoyakin Melech Yehudah Beis Kelem. The Davri Ito, and guess what? He decided that this king was really nice, and he spoke to him tovos. He spoke to him nicely. V'itenis kiso me'al kisa melochin. And he gave him a new throne, and he made him the most important person in the land. In other words, here this king went from being in the dungeon, was lifted up to being the most important king alive. He gave him royal respect and honor. And again, this goes to when a person does tshuva, that after all those years, his life changed. But it also speaks to the idea that the Davidic line will come back again. In other words, that people had said, you know, for 37 years he was in a dungeon. There was no hope. And Misones Bidde Kela, they took off his jail clothes, Alchu Lechem Tamid, and they gave him bread from the royal table. Baruchas Aruchas Tamid Itla Mesa Melech Dvar Yom B'Yom Kol Yemei Chayus. It's interesting that it talks about food. We're going to make a siyum. Very good. But the idea there was that the kingship of the house of David would continue. His descendants would be the leaders in Babylonia. They would be what the princes were from this house, and we believe to this day that those that are our leaders, many of them have been descended from the house of David. Rashi was descended from the house of David. Today it's hard to know. There are people that claim that. There are people that claim everything, that they have that they are related. You know, it's a good yichus to say you're descended from David HaMelech, but we believe he's amongst us, and that's the that's what we finish with, the leaders, the righteous leadership from the house of David. And with us, again, the righteous leadership doesn't mean people that never make mistakes, but it means fixing those mistakes and having the courage to do that, and no matter what, not giving up hope. And that's the message. Okay. Yeshikoyach, everyone. Yeah. Mazel tov. It can't be understated what kind of achievement it is when you come week in, week out, and you stick to it, you know, because many times people start projects and they drop out and they don't do it. And so we have, for us, the Siyum is really a joyous occasion, and a big Yeshikoyach to everybody. And
thank you for 18 years. years.
Oh,
yes.
Okay, sure. Thank you. Very good. Thank you for listening. And next week we're off. I actually have a Kashrus convention, and then we'll pick up the following week, which is actually the Haftorah for Tisha B'Av, the first week of Yeshaya. And then, like I said, if you want a break for the summer, let me know. If we're going to be here, then I'll be here, God willing, and we'll take it from there.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the Donate link. Thank you very much.